when scientists talk about learning, when you talk about learning, are conscious knowledge and the ability to perform a skill actually two different types of learning?
There's a lot of different ways to define the difference, but maybe a good place to start is on the neuroscience side. Talk about the brain a little bit. So there's sort of a unique system in the human brain, right? Kind of right in the middle of the brain, the medial temporal lobe, that has a set of neural structures that are specialized for remembering events, facts, knowledge you pick up from the world. And you see the how that system operates most clearly when you look at patients with damage, neurological damage to this part of the brain, can show a really surprising kind of profile when you're talking to them in that they're not they can talk to you. They're cognitively intact in a lot of ways. They can do problem solving. They also have their old history and memories. They can tell you about their youth growing up, but nothing that's happening to them now kind of leaves a new trace. No new facts, no new information goes in. And so it sort of highlights that there's this system that, is really specialized for this and only this. You lose the damage as part of the brain knocks exactly the ability to remember new facts and information out. But these patients can still do some kinds of skill learning, things that they practice, they seem to continue to get better at. And so that tells us that the neuroscientific basis of that kind of skill learning doesn't depend on that memory specialized system. In fact, what you run into when you talk to people in sort of neuroscience, especially cognitive neuroscience, they actually kind of use the words memory and learning as separate concepts. The memory typically refers specifically and exactly to the kind of things that hippocampus, medial temporal lobe, the specialized neural system does. And learning kind of gets used for everything else where behavior changes based on your experience that doesn't depend on this system. And most of that stuff is also tend to be called implicit learning. So my cat has just jumped up here on the table. She has learned that she should try to be on Zoom when I'm talking. The word implicit learning gets used to describe a lot of this in a way that's nearly synonymous, but really focuses on the fact that this other kind of learning is often outside awareness. You sort of get better. And so when I'm talking about this often in kind of scientific context, if you run into somebody who's really good at a skill, we often use music as an example. Golf would be another great example. You say, "How are you so good?" And you'll often just get the answer, "Well, I practiced a lot." And so that's true. They've practiced, and something has changed about the way they execute that skill has made them much better at it. But there's not an easy way to verbalize what the new knowledge is. So if you learned a set of facts, events, you go to school and you memorize. A list actually of a student studying this sort of more basic kind of memory. She's watching people learn the names of a set of chemical molecules and sort of an image name associated with learning. When you're done, you can report it back. You say, "Oh, that's this molecule, that's this molecule." You can talk about what you learned. That's what we do in a lot of classroom situations. They memorize a lot of facts, then they show that they know them back on the test. But skill learning often doesn't kind of work that way. You're just good at it. And when people ask you why, you don't have much to say. And once you realize it, it's coming from different parts of the brain, there's different kinds of representations, they're acquired different ways. You start realizing it makes sense of a lot of other things that people who do skill learning or skill training knew, right? That, there's a real difference between knowing how to do it and explaining how to do it. That somebody who's really good as an instructor doesn't have to be the best performer, right? I used to sort of give the example back in the day when Tiger Woods was the best golfer on the planet. It was like he still has a swing coach. He has somebody sort of watching and explaining and talking about things, even though nobody hits a ball better than he does. Or Steph Curry is a basketball shooter, they still get feedback. And I think some of that, well, some of it is just perspective. Somebody watching you can see things that you're not necessarily aware of. But also, I think some of it is there's a different sort of instruction, sort of uses a lot more of that conscious knowledge, knows what to look for, like, all right, where's your elbow, where's your weight shift, and sort of can kind of give you feedback. Those are all conscious things that are important for skill learning. But when you're doing it and getting better at it, what's happening in your brain is probably reorganization directly within these kinds of parts of the brain that are letting you do it. So if it's a very motor heavy skill, your motor system is just getting better at doing what you're doing so that it can do it more smoothly, more accurately, with less metabolic demands. And then that's what you sort of experience as skill learning. It's like it's getting easier. I'm getting better. You know, the outcomes are coming out better than I want. And that's probably due to this other kind of neuroplasticity where, you know, sort of our approach in my lab is to sort of been pushing this idea that consider every synapse in the brain plastic. Everything can change and everything sort of has a natural adaptive a tendency to reshape to get better at what you're doing. Now, one of the sort of pieces of that you also, you know, see people referencing it from skill learning that some people watching people try to get better skill. There's a phrase, I'm forgetting the source of it, but the practice makes permanent, not perfect. And so if you practice the wrong thing, actually, the best examples of that were there were some handful of golfers who had like very idiosyncratic swings. And they'd gotten very good at this swing. Nobody would coach, nobody would teach, but they could do it. And they just sort of hone their expertise in that. Whatever you practice, you're going to get better at. That system doesn't know necessarily exactly what's a great outcome. It's just like whatever you do, you're going to keep getting better at doing that. And those, the sort of changes in the brain, the neural systems that are changing. Those are happening kind of everywhere, but kind of importantly, outside that conscious facts and knowledge part of the brain. So when you're done, you're like, well, I practiced a lot, now I'm good at it. And it's like what you end up having to say when you're done there.
That makes a lot of sense. I'm wondering if skill learning explains this phenomenon, I'll call it. So when I go see my instructor, golf instructor, he can tell me where to put the club. He can tell me where I should be at my positions. And then I'm able to do it for a little bit, but then I'm not able to replicate it afterwards. It's almost like this gap between knowing and doing. Is that what skill learning sort of explains?
Well, there's definitely a big part. So if to it from that, the instructor has given you a series of facts. Here's what you want to do with your weight, with your arm, with your feet. But then that the neural system that's putting that in your conscious memory system, that's in the medial temporal lobe. Your motor planning system that comes out of premotor cortex and a variety of other areas involved in motor control. That's not where the information is. That system only gets good at that, you know, swing or the, you know, executing that when you get a bunch of repetitions on that through. And so one of the things to sort of note, we don't really know a lot of precise sort of quantitative estimates on this, but one of the reasons we think there is this specialized memory system is that neural reorganization processes don't learn that fast. Well, they don't learn on a single trial. This is something we've known from neural network modeling for decades. You know, even now, it says people with AI and these LLMs have been doing these amazing things. They're trained with millions of rounds of practice and, you know, not just large databases, but it's sort of a slow, gradual update through many reps through. One of the sort of early sort of quantitative theoretical neuroscience observations was that's kind of the way neural systems ought to learn. And so it's kind of amazing that humans remember the event. So if somebody tells you, you know, or keep your head down when you swing, and you learn that as a fact, it's actually hard to get a neural system to do that. And this very specialized system in the brain is sort of separate from everything else and kind of just does that. So that you can remember those facts, but then if you're trying to build skill learning, you're going to have to get a lot of reps. So we try to work in my lab on some paradigms that are that kind of lend themselves to ways of watching people do it. The paradigm that we use ends up actually one that we've had a lot of success with. Looks a lot like Guitar Hero. That interface with things moving on the screen that re you're reacting to gets you to do a lot of motor responses very quickly, and we can sort of embed some hidden structure that we can see people start to get sensitive to pretty quick. And one of the things we notice is it take we sort of build it up out of relatively short sequences, but like they're 12 keystrokes long, so there's like 12 motor actions. So it's probably a golf swing is probably more complex than that because there's more different muscles and motor planning involved. But it takes around 50 to 60 times through the sequence before we can start seeing that you know it. And so in that paradigm, we get a very clear look. We can see people getting really good at it, and we can often really see it. And then afterwards, people will say, I didn't know there was structure. I didn't know it was repeating. We can look at their button pressing and say, well, your fingers know. And they're like, oh, look, it's muscle memory. And at some level, I don't really correct people when they say that because that's a very intuitive way to think about it. It's not in muscles are out in your periphery, and that's not where the most of the synaptic plasticity is happening, but it's in the motor planning system in your brain. It's still up in your cortex, but it's not part of your conscious knowledge there. And so, that 50 to 60 actually is something you do see in habit learning literature and skill learning literature. And it's probably not a bad starting place. At around 50 is where the system has had enough kind of chances to run through the process where it starts on a pathway that will eventually become sort of automaticity or expertise. Exactly how that path kind of unfolds is something that's sort of active research on. But it sort of gives you an idea. Like if I tell you a kind of a heuristic or a rule of thumb to use, you might remember that if I tell you once. But to get it to like actually get into the your hands, you're probably going to need at least 50 to 60 kind of good repetitions. I will say one of the other things that we've been seeing in our lab too is looking at the learning process. We've been trying to figure out how to relate this to more complex skill learning. The learning that we see with our very controlled little, game-like laboratory tasks, it's very specific to exactly how you learn it. And if we make slight changes to the way things are moving on the screen or slight changes in the way you're responding, suddenly you act like you've never seen it before. It just doesn't work. And so we've wondered a lot in things like in music or golf, where like, even if you're doing the same swing, it's probably slightly different each time. One idea we've had is like maybe the reason, like if you're trying to play, I haven't played golf in a long time, but I certainly, I definitely experienced some of the subjective sense of struggle. I didn't have the sense that if I just had 50 good swings, I would have a good swing the next time out. But it may also be that like if you're doing it just a little bit different each time, you're not actually learning one swing. There's like a dozen or more, and you've got to practice each of them. 50 times just to get started, maybe a couple hundred to get good at it. And that's why it starts feeling like it takes a really long time to build up expertise. Right, that's sort of a hypothesis that we have about that. But is again, what we try to do in the lab is come up with controlled ways for looking at it so we can sort of get some ideas about what's going on there in that process. But yeah, so that basic disconnect, like being able to do and knowing what you're supposed to do, I think you're always going to see that because that instruction is like your ability to repeat back the instructions, not your ability to do it. Sometimes people hesitate about that. Sometimes we use an example, like if I told you how to juggle, you couldn't just pick up balls and juggle, right? But if you walk people through a series of like pieces of the juggling process, you can teach somebody to juggle in about 30 minutes. That basic three ball cascade, but you can't do it by just verbally describing. You sort of have to like walk them through a one ball toss and then show them how to like extend to a two ball. And I had a friend who worked in sort of like kids' birthday parties, and it was sort of a standard thing. You took all the little kids, and you could get half of them juggling in half an hour, and the parents were always really impressed. But it's sort of the same thing. It's sort of like you have to have a guided set of processes to work through. But if they don't have some balls in their hands, they don't start developing that skill.
One of the things you mentioned a little bit earlier was about neuroplasticity. From your research, the work you do in your lab, have you seen that that changes as we get older? Does that decline significantly, or is the jury still out on that?
Well, I mean, it's sort of a good question. Sometimes people describe some of the cognitive consequences of aging that way. So, I mean, honestly, some of that work in neuropsychology that showed you could still see learning in patients with damage, those are often older adults. There's a lot of reserve neuroplasticity. And so the ability to update with practice may not be that strongly affected by the aging process. Like that's always there. Your ability, that specialized system that lays down facts and events, that system seems like it might not hold up as well for aging. It is the place where we first start seeing the neurophysiological consequences of Alzheimer's disease, the sort of the beta amyloid plaques, the neurofibrillary tangles. They show up in the medial temporal lobe or in cortical areas next to that first in most of those cases. And so, but it and the progression of that disease often has this sort of amnesia, inability to remember new facts and events as something that happens early. As Alzheimer's proceeds, those plaques and tangles end up everywhere, and all the cognitive systems are disrupted. That's what dementia is. It's not just a loss of memory. But the sort of the motor systems for just getting better with practice, those, if they're affected by aging, actually maybe less, that you may be able to get a lot more out of it. But in a performance context, other aspects of physical performance might start declining. And so it feels like you're learning slower, but maybe it's just because the muscle tone is there, or other consequences are providing challenges to being able to perform. And so I would say that the idea that neuroplasticity falls off dramatically with age, probably not one that I would say is strongly supported in the literature. That if you're as an older, if you even as you get older, getting out there practicing, you're probably gaining as much as a younger person is. Actually, I think that some colleagues of mine working in Europe, Karolina Janáček and Dezra Nemeth, were looking at some developmental trajectories, and they suggested it's possible that middle schoolers actually learn faster. But then after that, once you hit adulthood, it looks like it's pretty flat throughout the rest of the lifespan, that kind of learning kind of gets into this sort of, it's just always there.
That's a very positive response, I think, for a lot of people. We like to hear that. One thing I'd like to kind of take down a different path is, we're talking about learning in sort of a, I don't know, would you call it sort of static environment? What happens when we get into, say, a pressurized situation, when you're under the gun, whether it's time pressure or outside factors? What have you seen? How does that adjust our ability to learn, take in information, and then execute on that?
My guess would be that there's an execution issue. There was actually a nice study that described this phenomenon they called verbal overshadowing. And colleague Mike Anderson, who's now at Cambridge, had done this study way back, and he actually used golf putting as the example. They found that when people had to think very consciously about what they were doing, it made experts perform worse. And when we saw, conversely, novices got better. And so when we looked at that, and I've talked to Mike about it, it might almost be a model of what happens under pressure with choking, is that like you're sitting there and it's really important to make the putt. And so you start thinking, okay, what did my coach tell me? What am I supposed to be doing? And then instead of just using the well-trained kind of motor programs that you honed in your expertise, you start trying to do it with a little bit more conscious control, and then you interfere with the programs. And again, that's a little bit of a hypothesis or an inclusion. We've seen some data like that in our lab. What we that just sort of hinted that knowing what you're doing or trying to control your behavior consciously may not happen at the same time scale. What we did in our just little video game task, we had people practice and start getting good. And then we told them, look, here's the sequence. You're hitting these 12 buttons in this order. We made them memorize it and report it back to us. And then we had them play again. And it basically has no effect at all on their performance. Knowing what they're doing doesn't help them do it. Because under normal conditions, you just want to get into that kind of A flow, I think, is a good way, or a flow states are the right way to think about it. Just let these well-trained motor programs kind of do their business, unfurl and execute your experience. And then if you try to start imposing this kind of top-down control and being very conscious, then you might disrupt the flow, the timing, the rhythmic structure of the motions. And so that's one idea of what can be happening when under pressure. What can happen is that people kind of revert back to this conscious knowledge, and that interrupts things. I will say it's a little bit of a hypothesis. It's a descriptive way of saying it. I could note when we designed our task where we had people memorize, we're actually following a description of skilled expertise from the music cognition literature. We've been looking at this difference between, knowing what you're supposed to do and knowing what you practice. And in music, they have an interesting tension because expert musicians will practice a piece they're playing over and over again. But then before going into a high-pressure context, we'll then sit down and separately memorize the score, which I always thought was an interesting description. Like, you just played it 100 times. Why do you need to memorize it separately now? Now, once you start realizing those are two different kind of brain systems, then you're like, okay, well, that's why there's are two different kind of processes. But then you're like, but why? And the description from these are expert cellists getting ready to perform like competitively to get in the symphony at Carnegie Hall. And they describe that every once in a while, your fingers just don't go to the next note properly, that there's some sort of failure of the simplest system. Now, we don't know how to make that happen in the lab, so we can say, where's that coming from? Does extreme stress or anxiety or other issues cause that kind of thing to happen? So we don't know why it happens, but the musicians described it happens, and that it's important enough that the reason you memorize the score is your fingers slip, and then you're conscious that, okay, it's bar 87, the melody goes like this, I got to get and play a C sharp. You get your hands back on the right place and back into the sequence and the flow to complete the part. And so there we see that maybe some of that conscious knowledge does kind of help you kind of get back on track. I don't know how big a role that'll play in things that are, like a golf stroke is a relatively, confined like set of actions. I don't think there's time in the middle of it, but like I said, there's a lot of things about questions about how these systems interact that are really just not particularly well understood. A lot of the neuroscience has been really just nailing down the kind of the boundaries of like which is kind of learning is in which system, what are the characteristics, how fast are they going. And so, people are just starting to like now chip away at the edges. I'm like, well, what's happening under pressure, or how does instruction get turned into these effective performance sequences efficiently, and what can we do about that?
It's really fascinating, especially the way that musicians have to go through things like you talked about. I'd love to finish up with one final question. This is more for your perspective. What is the most important thing you wish people understood about how human beings acquire complex skills?
As far as understanding in skill learning, I think people have a pretty good intuition that you want to get some good advice, and then you want to get out there and practice doing it so that you get better. One of the sort of, I think, underappreciated consequences of this sort of idea that this implicit learning, this sort of plasticity is happening all the time, is that a lot of your sort of ways that you interact with the world are getting shaped by what you do. And so your expectations for how the world is going to be around you really reflect the experience that you've had in it. And that, one of the sort of points in our work has been saying that this process isn't just the motor system, it's not just skills. And one of the reasons why sports and music are interesting, because there's cognitive elements in there too. It's not just, moving your hand as fast as you can. It's getting all the pieces together. And, in golf, it's like, it's not just one swing. It's like, well, where am I trying to get the ball, and how am I playing the strategy on the hole, and what's going to happen next? But once you realize it's in everything, then, you realize that actually the way your whole brain is sort of wired to react to the world is wired by the world around you. And one of the things I think that isn't always well understood is that some of the, where people end up with some biases and expectations about the world, those are happening through the same kind of mechanisms that are getting you skill learning, which means you're not always aware of them. And you can end up with some, expectations about the world that embed some bias, and you didn't mean to. Like, you weren't trying to be a person who had expectations about somebody when you meet them. But like, if that's just the way the world has been around you, you didn't choose your brain to wire that way. It's whatever you're experiencing, you're just getting better at. And I think really thinking about that makes you realize that, like, oh, it's why, it helps, I think, understand, some of our gut instincts and intuitions about the world. That, that skill, like, your brain is sort of treats everything you do in the world as skill learning. And so some of those things show up in kind of, all sorts of funny kind of interpersonal ways, like habits you develop in interacting with your spouse or partners or people around you. Those are, all of those, habits are learning like those skills, and they're all coming from the same way. What you're doing, you come to like just get more better at, and also to expect that to be happening. I think, in a skill learning thing, as I said, mostly, people know, practice and get better. But then realizing that your brain is always practicing and getting better. There's no off switch for this kind of memory. There's no way of saying, like, okay, let's, just not worry about it now. Like, it's intrinsic to the way your brain is, like, wired to interact with the world.